By the way, I have a couple things I want to share that I've made available at the back table there. One is I just have a few copies of two different pamphlets. I do a weekly email called Gracelets. It's a free email, and you can sign up for it. You just go to my website, billferris.com. It's a little hard to remember. Just one R in Ferris, okay? You can sign up for it there, or you can just, you know, let me know. But a couple of them I turned into some little brochures, and so there's a couple different examples of those back there, just so you can grab one if you like. And then I wrote a book called How Healed Do You Want to Be? And there's a story behind the title, which I can't get into this morning, but the front part of the book references something I'd like to share with you in a video here in just a second. I want to bring Robin into the room, my wife, in this manner, so you get to meet her. Since she couldn't be here in person today. But I do talk about this event that happened in our life 16 years ago in this book. And then I also, really the heart of the book is, what do we mean by healing? What is healing? How do we understand a healing process? And so I break it out into five different aspects or dimensions of what the healing process really is, what it involves. And so it's helpful for any kind of healing you're thinking about, physical, emotional, spiritual, relational, whatever. All have the same five characteristics, and once you kind of map it a little bit, it helps. 16 years ago in February, Robin was out picking two of our four children up from school, quite a little bit of a distance from our home. It was actually extremely rainy winter in February of 2000, and coming back up the long grade, if you know where Ladera Ranch is in Antonio Parkway in South County, she was coming up a long grade uphill, about 50 miles an hour through the rain, and a guy and his buddy coming out of working in Ladera, sheet metal worker and his pal, in a hurry to get home from work, coming down the same hill, he lost control of his car, his truck, and he slid across and basically front-end collision. So it was a devastating accident. The passenger in the truck was killed on the scene. The driver of the truck was injured a little bit. My son Andrew, my second son, was next to my wife in the passenger seat of the minivan, and he broke his thumb and had some seatbelt lacerations. My three-year-old daughter at that time was in the middle seat in her car seat, and she was not hurt at all. Let's hear it for car seats. Yeah. My wife did not fare very well. Because of the nature of the accident, sort of a T-bone, she took a huge amount of the force. She had over 50 broken bones and 3 brain injuries. We had just been sent out to plant a church 4 days before this, so I think I understand a little bit about spiritual warfare, and anyway, our lives were instantly changed in a moment's time, and so we've learned a lot about healing in a lot of different angles and ways. Good news is, she's a miracle to this day. You'll learn a little bit more about her recovery in this video. And meet her. She's actually going to start a doctoral program in the fall. She is a professor of nursing at National University. She was a labor and delivery nurse for many, many years, and went and got her master's, taught at Biola for a year, taught at Cal State Fullerton for a couple years, and then is now teaching at National University, where she seems to have really found a good home for her skills. And so when several years ago, somebody had told somebody about our story, and the people at CBN heard about it, and they called us and said, can we come and make a testimonial video about your story? And we said yes, and so they came over and made what I'm about to show you, this 5-minute video that would give you a little feel for us and a little feel for my wife. So enjoy that.
Just a normal routine day. And I was going to my daughter's school to pick her up from preschool to bring her home.
On their trip home, Robin Ferris and her children ran into a heavy rainstorm. Her husband, Bill, was working his cell phone right.
It was from the hospital, saying your family's been in a terrible accident. We need you to come right away.
During the driving rain, another driver lost control of his truck, crossed the median, and slammed into Ferris's van. A passenger of the truck was killed. Bill rushed to the hospital, not knowing what he would find.
I'm praising God, calling upon him, asking him to intervene, you know, asking him to be there in the midst of all this. And then in this next breath, I'm turning around, and as if I were talking to the devil and all his demons, I'm saying, "Oh, no, you don't."
When Bill reached the hospital, he found that the children were fine, but he wasn't prepared to hear the doctor's report on his wife.
And then they sat me down and said, "Now we need to talk to you about your wife." And it was way too much information. It was doctor after nurse specialist, you know, saying, "Now let's go over her orthopedic injuries. She's, you know, had a tremendous number of fractures. She's got a wound 9 inches long on the side of her head, so she has brain injury, she had brain trauma."
Robin went through emergency surgery to save her life. Mary Kay Bader was part of the trauma team that worked on Robin.
She was close to death, not just because of a brain injury, but because of her ability to breathe on her own. Her heart was beating, which was a good sign, but she had a low blood pressure as well as the severe brain injury. And then she had almost 60 fractures or broken bones in her body.
I didn't get to see her till the next morning. But when I saw her, it was shocking because she was swollen up, she was bruised, they had shaved off, you know, most of her hair. And she had this big thing sticking out of the top of her skull to monitor her brain, you know, her intracranial pressure. This is the woman that I had been joined to for well over 20 years, and I was going to put my hands on her wherever I could find somewhere that wasn't bandaged and pray for her and watch.
Robin was moved to a critical care unit. She was alive, but in a medically induced coma.
The first week to 2 weeks after a severe traumatic brain injury are tenuous. The patient can die at any moment, especially if you cannot control the swelling in the brain. And based on Robin's brain injury, as well as her other injuries, we knew we had a woman who had basically had every body system that was affected.
Bill continued praying for his wife. Then she was slowly awakened from the coma.
There was only one outcome in my mind that was acceptable, and that was her recovery. It was really hard. I think it was harder to watch her be in that much pain and awake and aware than it was harder to watch her struggle in the ICU to live.
Dozens of broken bones had to heal. Robin also had to recover from a massive brain injury.
I slept upstairs in our bedroom while she couldn't even manage stairs, so she was down on the hospital bed below. We had a baby monitor between her and me overnight, and I could hear her on the speaker overnight, you know, crying in pain and you know, really, that still gets me. It was really hard.
Robin spent nearly 3 months in the hospital and rehab before going home. Through prayer, hard work, and family support, she made excellent progress.
The first time I walked all the way upstairs with my walker, with my husband, with my therapist, physical therapist, and upstairs to the second floor of my house, I just stood there and cried.
Even though it's been a slow process, Robin says she knew all along that God would heal her and she would have a good quality of life.
Isaiah 41:10 has been my scripture, you know, "Fear not, for I'm with you, and be not dismayed, for I will hold your right hand." And I've always felt like God had his right hand around me all the time, you know, and I was hanging on as tight as I could. It's our reward to see someone back in their life, back engaged in and working, you know, towards their dream or their goals, and always moving forward. And Robin has done that. If you give me two patients with the same injuries, and one has a family and a faith that's strong and one has nobody, I can tell you who's going to wake up and who's going to make it back into their life. It's the one with the family and the faith.
It is a miracle that she survived. A, that she survived. B, that she had all of her brain use back, that she was able to go back to school and finish her degree, go back to work, be a mom, be a wife.
It's awesome to have my life back. I basically am trying to do everything all the time.
We have a friend that calls her the Miracle Lady. And her story has inspired so many people because it was against all odds, you know. It was really against all odds that not only she survived, but that she survived with all of her abilities.
I'm thankful to God for his love for me and for never letting me go and for just keeping his hands on me the whole time.
So they have reenactors playing the different roles there, as you saw. And I asked the producer about the guy that played me. Clooney wasn't available? He said, no, they checked into it, and he couldn't make it, so. When you say yes at the altar, what are you saying yes to? How do you know? How could you know? But that's the deal, isn't it? We say yes, and then we go, and we live out the implications of that yes, that I do, whatever they may be, and God is faithful to see us along the way. Well, today we're going to start into the things you got notes about last night, and this is what we're calling Level Up Your Marriage, and here is, it's all a big setup, you guys. You're being set up for something. So today we're going to have a little fun, because you're going to get involved in this a little bit, and the setup is this. At the end of the matter, I'm setting you up to ask your partner for something. What is going to be up to you? But I'm going to give you parameters, and I'm going to lead you into the process of preparing for this ask. So don't get ahead of me. Don't decide right now what you're going to ask them or anything like that, because there are some specific pieces to the puzzle of how you're going to ask and what you're going to ask and things like that. I guess there's some notes going around. If you need them, raise your hand if you didn't get them last night. This is going to be sort of preparatory, and we're going to use Ephesians 3 as kind of our scriptural backdrop to lead us into the four dimensions of love and commitment and marriage that we're going to utilize to prepare ourselves for this final conclusion of the big ask. And so, with that, I'm going to have you start this morning. You've heard of your sleep number, you know, and you have all these different numbers. Well, I'm going to ask you for your marriage number, okay? And here's how I want you to think about this. 1 to 3, and you can choose whatever you feel, anywhere between 1 and 3 is I find very little satisfaction in our marriage. I find very little satisfaction in our marriage is a 1 to a 3. Number 4 through number 6, I find some satisfaction in our marriage. 7 and 8, I find a pretty high level of satisfaction in our marriage. And 9 or 10 is just glory hallelujah. Okay? So I want you to just, using that simple scale, I want you just to assign a number. This is not scientific. This is just your gut, your impression. I don't want you to show this to your mate right now. I just want you just between you and yourself, I want you to put a number down that you feel represents the level of satisfaction. 1 to 3, very little satisfaction. 4 to 6, some satisfaction. 7 to 8, pretty high level of satisfaction. 9 and 10, you should be up here talking, not me. Now, I'm going to give you a second to put that down. And while you're thinking about that, here's what I want you to think about. What would it take to move the number that you just wrote down up 1 more? So in other words, if you wrote down a 5, what would get you to a 6? What would it take? If you wrote a 6, what would it take to get to a 7? So a lot of times we think, well, we're at kind of a 3 or a 4, and what's it going to take to get us to a 10? I'm not asking that, and I don't think it's tremendously helpful to ask that at this point. But how about just what would it take you to get to from 4 to 5 or 3 to 4? What would bump up your number by a factor of 1? And so this is what we're going to call leveling up your marriage. If your marriage is in serious crisis, if you're down there in the basement on these numbers, you know, this level up approach won't necessarily feel tremendously helpful to you right now. You don't want to say, you know, guess what, honey? Our marriage went from nuclear bomb site to terminal disease, you know? So you might need more help than that, if that's the case, you know. Get help now if you do. But leveling up by one is helpful because it puts things within reach. It kind of makes us think, what is the next best point we could reach that would feel like we were going to a new place in our marriage and in our relationship? And so this is how we're going to look at this today. Now we're going to take a kind of a systematic approach based on this passage from Ephesians. Specifically, we're going to explore four dimensions of marital relationship: wider, longer, higher, deeper. The four dimensions of your relationship. And this is from Ephesians chapter 3, where Paul expresses his desires for believers to level up their knowledge and experience of the love of Christ by using the language of dimension. In that passage, Ephesians 3, 17 through 19, Paul uses the language of dimension to talk about our experience of the love of Christ. And he says, "And I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power, together with all the Lord's holy people, to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to know the love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with to the measure of all the fullness of God." Wow. Paul's prayer, Paul's desire, is that believers grow in not only in depth of love for Christ, but in width and in height and in breadth. And so using that invitation that Paul is giving us to grow in our love for Christ dimensionally, we're going to think about this a little bit in terms of our marriage. What specifically can help your marriage increase by a factor of one so as to become wider? And by wider, here's what I mean. This is about introducing new experiences into our life, less in a rut, widening up the dimensions of your marriage, getting out of your marital ruts, and opening up your experience as a couple to more things. Longer, this will be about adding greater strength and longevity to your marriage. Less fragile, less brittle, more elastic, more durable. That kind of idea. Higher, this is going to be about empowering spiritual purpose, less worldly, less mundane, more understanding the mission of your marriage, the purpose of your marriage, and understanding that dimension. And then deeper, this will be about increasing emotional and sexual connectivity, less perfunctory, more connected, more close, more deep. So now we're going to take a look a little more closely at each of these four dimensions. And we're going to start with wider. And having a wider marriage is about your relationship gaining new experiences. I'm going to briefly spotlight five areas of new experiences. This is just sort of an introduction to how we might think about adding new experiences to our marital relationship. And you may find this relative to your marriage number. You may, as we go along, say, well, I think one thing it would take to bump up my 6 to a 7 is we just need to have some new experiences together. Gee, what kinds of new experiences might we have, and so forth. So this will maybe this will be relevant to you as you think about this whole idea of leveling up your number by one. And so let's look first of all at these five ways that we might make a wider relationship. Number one, travel. Number one, travel. How can we travel to some new places, have some new travel experiences together? Number two, service. How might we serve together so that it increases and expands and makes wider our relationship? Number three, partnership. What kinds of new partnerships might we develop or increase so as to make our relationship wider? Number four, recreation. How can we play more? How can we enjoy more? How can we recreate more as a couple? And number five, enrichment. Well, kind of like what we're doing here. How can we add value to our relationship by introducing experiences and knowledge and relationships that enrich our marriage? And so we're going to look at these five things one at a time. And at points, I'm going to ask for your help. And this is one of the most fun things about when I do this presentation is I learn a lot of things. We learn a lot of things in the audience from each other, and so it could be a lot of fun if you'll come up with some things as we go. So let me ask you this, starting off with travel. When was the last time you traveled together as a couple? And I guess I don't mean like coming away necessarily to this little location, like a little local travel. I mean like, you've made a real memory of travel together. You've been to somewhere rather unusual, new, exotic, different, whatever like that. When was the last time that the two of you did that? You know, look at each other, check in with each other, make sure you're on the same page there. When was the last time you kind of traveled somewhere interesting or different together? While you're in that mode, what is the farthest distance you have traveled together? What is the farthest distance you've traveled together? Where did you go? Together. Answer it with kids and answer it without kids. It's fine. Number three, what is the most unusual place you traveled to? The most unusual place you traveled to together. Yeah. What do you think? Okay, now I want to ask you, if you would, volunteer for me. Who could tell us about an unusual place they traveled to together? What was your answer? Somebody here. Yes, back there. Wow. Awesome. Jamaica. I've never been to Jamaica. That's awesome. Somebody else. Where's an unusual place? Right here. You were in the desert with Bedouins camping. Wow. That's amazing. Between the Ecuadorians and the Jamaicans and the Bedouins, we're getting the world pretty well covered right now. Can I ask you how long ago was that? 2 weeks ago. Whoa. Bill, is that what you meant by one desert to another? Somebody was, wow. Yes, back at the table. Oh, wow. Wow, powerful. I don't know if you all heard that. He said Germany concentration camps like Dachau. Wow, powerful, amazing. Anybody else? I'll kind of look over the side of the room. Anybody over here got something? I got nothing. Oh, wait, I see a hand. Yes. You went to Egypt and saw the pyramids? Oh, Belize. Oh, South American pyramids. Mayan pyramids? Oh, wow. How long ago was that? December, just a few months ago. Oh, fantastic. Oh, we got one right here. Who'd have thought, you guys, not the Nile in Egypt on a cruise? Who'd have thought in this room there'd be so much variety? Now, are you getting some ideas? Anybody want to just go ahead and try to hit all of these in order over the next 5 years? Amazing. Now, you know, not all travel takes a lot of money, or not all travel requires you to pack a lot of bags. With a little imagination, you can travel to many new cultures and have many new experiences right here in the LA Basin. I mean, this is one of the most culturally rich areas of the world, and there are so many things to experience here. To have a little travel into something in this greater Los Angeles area, you can really have some amazing new experiences as a couple and not have to spend a lot of money, but you can have some pretty, you know, different and exotic and introductions to new cultures, new experiences, new foods, new places, all kinds of things. So, you know, open up your imagination a little bit and think all the history, all the culture, all the art, culinary experiences, geographical varieties that's available with just a short distance of where we live here. It's amazing. We're in an amazing part of the world. And so here we go. We could start here locally, just kind of branching out, traveling, doing some different experiences that way. And then we could go all the way to Egypt or Ecuador or any number of places that we've heard about today. Another way to broaden or widen your marriage is by partnering in what I call a controlled crisis. Partnering in a controlled crisis. For example, whitewater river rafting. Okay? I mean, so if you put yourself into an experience that is unusual and demanding on you in a certain kind of a way, it takes you out of your comfort zone, but you do it together, and it's a controlled crisis. Okay? In other words, it's safe. You're not going to kill yourselves, but you're going to have an experience out of your norm. You share that experiences and you bond deeper, especially a couple weeks after it's over when you recall it together. Remember when we were in that canyon and the water was this and then, oh yeah. You know, and you're creating a memory together. there's something about crisis that does just naturally bond people. We know this, you know, we watch people go through a terrible storm or a terrible sickness or injury together, and it just, strangers become best friends. I mean, it just takes people to another place all by itself, just by sharing in a crisis. So if you can kind of shrink that down and control it and enter into a controlled crisis as a couple, it can be really interesting how it might just bond you. And so, just real quick right now, stop and write down a place you would like to go or a cultural experience you would like to share with your spouse. Okay? Just make a note. Okay, this is not a commitment. This is not a certainty. This is your imagination in action. What you just heard some ideas today. Make a little note on what is a place you'd like to go or a cultural experience you would like to share with your spouse to make your relationship wider. Make a little note. Now let me move on to another way we might think about broadening or widening our relationship and breadth of our relationship, and that is by serving together. What about serving together at church or at school or in the community in some way, short-term mission trip in the neighborhood serving, short or long-term endeavor of some kind of a service commitment that you make, something utilizing your own home, your own resources in some way, putting them to service together. And so this is not something I'm saying one of you should do, because maybe one of you already is serving in some area, or one of you is already, you know, making use in some way of their time, talent, and treasure in that way. But I'm talking about together, doing something together that is service-oriented. So let's get some ideas. What are some ways that you guys, either currently or have in the history of your relationship, served together? Give us some notions of that. Yes. Children's ministry. And that is a controlled crisis right there. If anything's a controlled crisis. Now, I'll give you a little secret. I wasn't even 20 years old. I was about 19 years old in Bible school. And I was at a large church. Well, while in Bible school, we had to do what they called a field ministry, something that was putting our knowledge to work for the Lord. And the church that the Bible school was connected to was a large church, and they had a large junior high department. And so I found out that they needed helpers, and I said, well, that'll be my field ministry. I'll go volunteer in the church's junior high department. And so I did. And the way that this was set up was they had about 200 junior high kids gathered together, and they brought them all together for a little time of worship and teaching and sharing. And then they broke the kids out into small groups with volunteer leaders. A pair, two volunteer leaders, would take about five kids and go off, you know, into their own little meeting time to break out what they had learned and experienced together in the big group. And so I didn't have a partner going into the volunteer service at the junior high department, so they gave me a partner. Her name was Robin Austin. And I was very happy with the selection that they made for me of my service partner. And we would get together to study for the next week's lesson, you know, during the week. And as time went along, the amount of time we spent actually studying for the lesson grew smaller and smaller, and the amount of time that we enjoyed just being together and learning about each other and falling in love got larger and larger. And so we got married. I was 20, she was 21, just a few years after that. And so serving together in children's ministry happens to be a part of our story that was actually a foundation of our relationship. It's actually one of the ways that we discovered each other and got together, and God really used that. So other ideas about serving. Children's ministry is a great one. How about some other ones? How have you served? Or yes? Praying together on a prayer chain or prayer team. Awesome. Awesome. Absolutely. Yeah, back here. Had you ever done anything like that before? Yeah. Yeah, and you didn't know you were going to do this as a couple, did you? But But amazing, you've opened your home and you're sharing your home with somebody, and it's a family, you said. How many? How many? 10. 10 people. 5 children. Well, God bless you. That's fantastic. I'm sure that's changing. God. Oh, say that again one more time. I don't want anybody to miss that. That was really powerful, what you just said. I love that. I love that. We couldn't go out, but God brought into us an opportunity to serve together. I think that's fantastic. Anybody else? Right here. Food bank for 20 years, together. And did you? What did you do in the food bank? Wow. Oh, wow. So good. Okay, one more. What is it? Host a home study, like a Bible study in your home. How long you been doing that, or did you do that? You doing it now still? Just started. New adventure in your home. See what I'm telling you? That's what I'm saying. All right, great. All right, so so here's some things that happen with that. When you serve together, you know, it changes you and it bonds you, and you make new experiences that open up your relationship wider. So take a second right now and write down, just make a note, an event or an endeavor at which you and your spouse might enjoy serving others together. Okay? And again, use your imagination. This is not a commitment. This is just something you'd like to think about some more. Got your attention. What's a way you'd like to possibly serve together? Make a note. Now let's talk about partnership. Partnership as a way to widen your marriage. Developing a sense of partnership can widen your marriage. Partnership defined as this: a commitment that requires two working together to fulfill. A partnership is a commitment that requires two working together to fulfill. Okay? And so here's some examples. Parenthood. Probably one of the most fundamental partnerships that you're ever going to know if you are a parent. Homeownership is a partnership, isn't it? Crisis management, helping with aging parents or some kind of sickness or crisis that you're addressing together, you're partnering up on. Business partnership, starting a business together or joining into a business together. A charitable partnership, you know, starting or endeavoring to accomplish something charitable together, not so much in a service orientation, but maybe launching something like that. Projects like planting a garden together or starting an affinity group or a Bible study, like you're saying. Anything where you're just going to take on a project together, home renovation. I want to think of things that actually keep couples together. So I want to take that last one off. But anyway, you know, some kind of a partnership situation. It's what I call the power of two. Two are better than one. This is something that's going to get done at all or get done a whole lot better because you're doing it together. So think about this power of two. The power of two involves three things. The power of two involves advocacy, like David and Jonathan. Couples that advocate for each other in their partnership or projects become empowered, like David and Jonathan, to create something better for each other in their advocacy of one another. Remember, when you read the scriptures, you guys, there is no King David without Jonathan. You cannot, if you take Jonathan out of the equation, you have no story of David like we know it. Jonathan creates the opportunities for David to become, to fulfill his destiny. And so their deep friendship became a partnership which created advocacy and value and many, many, many powerful things. As I shared with you, my wife is currently going into a doctoral program. She went back to school a couple years after the accident, which happened in 2000, so 16 years ago, she came to me one day and she said, I never finished my bachelor's degree. And she's been in nursing our whole lives, but she said, I'm kind of wondering if I should go back to school. APU has an accelerated degree program, and I've kind of thought about it. And she said, but do you think I'm too old? And I said, well, honey, she's in her 50s. I said, well, honey, here's the thing. 2 years from now, you're going to be 2 years older, either with a degree in your hand or without one. So what do you want to do? And she says, I think I want to try this. And about halfway through, it's very intensive. The 18-month program, very intensive program. She almost bailed out halfway through. It took everything she had. I was typing all of her papers because she wasn't very good at typing at that point. So on. But she buckled up. She got through the program. She graduated. She was so excited. I was so proud of her. And within a year, she came back to me and said, okay, I think I want to get my master's now. I said, fine, but I'm not typing any more of your papers. But that's a kind of a partnership, and that I advocated for her. And she's done the same for me through changes that I've gone through over the years. She's been my advocate, my partner. She's enabled me into the next things that God had for me. And so that's one way of partnering. Another way is mentoring, like Paul and Timothy. So another way of partnering is mentoring others. And this is a great discussion to have in a group like this of married couples, because marriage mentoring is a tremendously powerful partnership where you can invite younger couples to get to know you and connect with you as an older married couple, an experienced married couple, and become partners in their marriage in a sense of being a mentor and a resource and a friend and a prayer partner and all of those things. And so doing that together makes you feel the value of your own relationship much stronger. You realize, wow, look what we've got. One of the things that I do when I do premarital counseling is I have the couple, I ask them this question. I say, okay, you guys, I want you to think through your list, mental list of who you've got in your life. And parent, family member, extended family, somebody from church, somebody that you know in the community, in the neighborhood, you know, whose marriage do you admire? You know, who do you have in your life? And you admire, you know, even something about their marriage. Who comes to your mind? You know, so they'll look at each other, they'll sit and think about it. And you guys, so many times that makes me so sad. They look back at me and they say, nobody. We don't have anybody who has a marriage that we admire in our lives. But you guys could change that for somebody else. Because even if you're, you know, not an old guy like me, but even if you're coming up through the ranks, you're ahead of somebody. You know more than somebody else knows, and you got something to share, even with people who are pre-married. How are they going to learn the valuable lessons of marriage and family from a Christian perspective, especially if you don't show them and teach them? So my wife and I, boy, did we have the blessing of having some people in our lives that helped us along the way at different points, mentored us, and their partnership in our marriage created value for us to partner with other people in their marriage, including our own children. Two of my sons are married. And it's been awesome. So think about that. Mutual benefit. So advocacy, mentoring, and mutual benefit. The idea of being partners in marriage for the mutual benefit of one another. And this is really the Ephesians 5 model that Paul gives us about Christ and the church. That model, that image of being really at each other's service, not just as advocates in life, but in advocates in identity, in becoming, in formation. In other words, in Ephesians 5, Paul says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. And what's the next phrase? And gave himself up for her. And gave himself up for her. Oh, yes, there are two verses for the women about submitting to their husband's leadership and submitting to their husbands as unto the Lord. Yes, there are two verses about that. And yes, men, there are six verses written to us about giving our lives up for her self-sacrificially. So if we do our part, guess how much more inviting it is for the women, our wives, to come and honor that with their submission and respect. But we have no business calling for submission if we haven't taken the step of self-sacrifice. And so this is a partnership aspect. So when we do that, then we become committed, you know, elevating one another, making each other's lives richer, better, stronger. Not just in the sense of a career, like I was telling you about with my wife, or education or something, but just in the sense of your whole formation. I know that my wife told me that today she is praying for me between 9 and 12 today. She knows that I'm doing this. And so she's making me a better person this morning, as many of you have, by the way, encouraged me in that way. She's making me a better person this morning because she's excited that I'm here. She said, she told me on the phone last night, I'm proud of you. And she is praying for me today. And she's making me a better person. And I look for those opportunities to do the same. So that partnership aspect is very powerful. The power of two. It takes two to do this thing better. Parenthood, homeownership, crisis management, business partnership, charitable partnership projects, advocacy, mentoring, mutual benefit. Write down now a little idea, just a note, about partnership you could imagine sharing with your spouse. Partnership you could imagine sharing with your spouse. What would you and your spouse like to do for your grandchildren, for example? That just came to my mind, that you haven't started doing yet. The list goes on. Use your imagination. Making our marriage wider through recreation, playing together. Oh man, life is so demanding. Playing together is not easy. Sometimes even playing, just getting time to just be playful on your own is not easy. But doing things, recreating together, but notice the word, recreating, recreating. Remember last night I said that left to themselves, our hearts just naturally get harder and harder, and we have to introduce factors that soften our hearts. And all of these things that I'm sharing with you today are going to be those factors that if you employ them, they will keep your hearts softer toward each other. Because I'm going to share it with you later about the power of making warm emotional memories together. That softens your heart. And so recreation, recreation, is a way to strengthen your partnership, to widen it, to broaden it. And so, of course, obviously there's sports. Tennis, golf, swimming, whatever. That is sports-oriented. Now, I do not golf. I'm a Christian. And so, don't do it. For one thing, I don't think God wants to hear me cuss that much. And, you know, anyway. But there's other sports, too, that you could imagine doing together. Games. Bridge, crossword puzzles, and so forth. I was counseling an African American pastor couple that came to me from the Los Angeles area, and one of the things that became part of our conversation was over time was the fact that they had recently taken up playing dominoes, and it was a vicious partnership, a vicious competition. But one that we laughed our heads off about. We would come in for our session, and one of the first things I would ask them is, okay, who's ahead now? And then they would just take off on it, like, oh yeah, he thought he was gonna get me last time. But he going down, you know, and she would, and then he'd come in the next time with a big smile on his face, like, she'd like to catch up to me right now, but she. Oh, we had so much fun. So they had just taken up dominoes and just had a ball, you know, just playing together and even competing in a way. We play a certain game in our family that my son introduced us to, and some of you will surely know it, called Settlers of Catan. And it's a board game. And before we play it, we are required to take a certain vow together where we put our hands in the middle and touch our hands together in the middle, and we recite this. This is just a game. We are a family. We love each other. And then we go about killing each other in the game. So recreation, sports, games, affinity groups, like a reading group, a gardening group, a bicycling group, something like that. You know, recreation that involves that. I'm going to ask you for some ideas in just a second here, but I got to tell you about, I did this a couple years ago for a church in the Northridge area, and up in the valley, I asked, well, so what are some ways that you guys have recreated together? And I got the most surprising, I did not see this coming, kind of like the tree houses. I didn't see this coming, or the Bedouins. This couple said, well, yeah, well, we were out walking a few months ago in the park one day, in this particular park, and we came across this area that was sort of roped off and separated, and people were throwing sharp things. I said, what? I said, yeah, they were throwing knives and tomahawks and things like that into targets, and it was like a thing that they did at this park. It's like a form of recreation, throwing sharp things. So they said that they walked over and they asked a few questions about what was going on, and they said, can you guys teach us how to throw sharp things? And they said, sure, we'll show you some things about how to throw sharp things. And so they said, so one of the new ways that we have recreated is that we threw sharp things together. I thought, well, now I've heard everything. So do not try this at home, kids, right? So give me some ideas. What are some recreational things that you guys enjoy doing together or have enjoyed doing together? Yes? Walking. How much does it cost to walk, right? Yeah. So great. Now tell us a little bit. Do you walk just like around your house, and how far do you go? And that is awesome. Way to go. Living by the beach and walking around Bolsa Chica, beautiful idea. Other ideas, what are some other ways that you recreate? Okay, so it's a habit, it's like a deal. So Sunday night, what do you guys, tell us a little bit more what you do. You go camping a lot, yeah. And do you go to the same places all the time, or do you go to new places, or how do you do that? That is awesome. Have you guys done that for a long, long time? Has that been like a regular part of your life together? Raise your kids camping. That's so great. Wow. Fantastic. Great idea. Yeah. Somebody else over here? Anybody? Yeah. Right here and then back there. You sew. So what? You made your shirt? That's fantastic. That's a new one. I hadn't heard that one before. How long have you been doing that? And I like that it's a new thing for you guys. How did you decide to take on something like that? Very cool. So you guys use sharp things too, like needles and stuff like that. Mike? Bocce ball. Yeah, yeah. Got it. Oh, that's a great idea, though. It's so not expensive. It's easy. It's cheap. And you... That's a great, great idea. Yeah, I think there was somebody else over here. Did I miss? Back in the back. Oh, Jenga. Yeah. Oh, like a life-size Jenga with 2x4s. What a scream. What a great idea. Okay, take a moment, write down a note. Note something that you would like to do recreationally. You could imagine doing recreationally together. Okay, I got one more and I'm going to make it quick. Enrichment. Here's some ideas of enrichment. Marriage enrichment weekends. Oh, hey, here we are. Retreats. Something I call mini moons. And enrolling a marriage mentor couple. In other words, getting a marriage mentor for you. As a couple, getting someone to speak into your life as a couple. They're pretty self-evident. What I mean by these are things that just simply add richness or enrichment to your marital commitments and strengthen and enrich them and make them wider. Marriage enrichment weekend, retreats. Let me just say a word about mini moons. Mini moons are The idea of once a quarter, you set aside a 24-hour period that is sanctified on your calendar and set apart so as to be just for the two of you, whether you've got kids or don't got kids or whatever, or 10 people living in your home or whatever you got. This is just the two of you time. This is a bubble. And it may be that you can go away somewhere, but it may be that you're just going to stay at home, have a staycation, and shut the world out for 24 hours, and you're going to sleep in or watch a movie or, you know, take a walk or just slow life down as a couple, enjoy each other, enjoy time together, maybe make a meal together, cook together, whatever it might be. Just do whatever you enjoy doing for 24 hours once a quarter. And then one of the four quarters, you do it for 48 hours. Good time, if possible, around your anniversary to have that extra day. And that just becomes a part of your calendar habit. Oh, it's time for our mini moon. What are we going to do? We're going to go away. We're going to stay home, whatever. But you set it apart, and that's just you time for the two of you. And once a quarter, it's 2 days, 48 hours, where you just tell the world to go away for a while the two of you enjoy, relax, and do some of these other things that we've talked about. Okay? That's a mini moon. Isn't that good? Yeah. Not hard. Just the key thing is you got to put it on the calendar first and then decide what you're going to do. Don't wait to figure it all out, then put it on the calendar. Go ahead and put the date down. You can always adjust it, but get it on the calendar. So I'd like to just take a second now, write down something you imagine you and your spouse would both find spiritually, maritally, or personally enriching you could do together. Make an enrichment note here. What would you like to do together that would be spiritually, maritally, personally enriching as a couple? We're going to take a break before we move on.